Monday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. Ducks win. Jake, they did it. They snapped the losing streak.
Wait, is this just the losing streak they've been on, the losing streak that has been happening when I do the podcast?
Both, okay. I think. Both?
I'm trying to think about the last time I recorded about a win, because CJ was the one on the Blues podcast, so it definitely wasn't me.
It's been that long, so Jake has snapped his own personal losing streak.
What would have been the last win?
I don't know.
Now I need to trace back and kind of see. I don't know.
Well, the Ducks won tonight.
Yes,
3-0.
Spoiler.
The more important thing. I would classify that as more important than Jake's own personal win-loss record on the show. But it was a big performance from the Ducks. Ryan Getzlaf, after dishing out some harsh words to his team after last game, basically came out and just put the team on his back. Had a goal and an assist, was the best player on the ice for Anaheim, I thought. The defense had a really solid game. And John Gibson had a shutout. And this is something that we've been talking about lately, where John Gibson just hasn't been at the top of his game, nowhere close, actually. And tonight, not the most spectacular of shutouts. I don't think, besides the first save of the game that he had to make, it wasn't this game where he had to stand on his head. And I think that the Ducks and John Gibson will take it that way, right? Where he doesn't have to overextend himself. So all in all, a solid performance, something that they can build on, right?
Yeah, this is definitely something they can build on. There's a whole lot there. You look at some of the numbers, it was maybe a little bit iffier, but the Ducks really did generate more chances, and they did a good job of protecting Gibson in a way that they haven't really done, especially over the last 10 games. I mean, this was a thing I think I mentioned last show, but over the last 10 games, at least leading into the game against the Lightning, I believe, the Ducks were worse in the league at allowing shot attempts against, in terms of they allowed the most shot attempts against and they allowed the most expected goals against. So not only was the volume there against, but the quality was there against. So this was a much needed kind of break in that for John Gibson. And shocker, if John Gibson is given a little bit of a favorable matchup and isn't completely shelled, he's a very good goalie and can get a shutout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, let's just get right into the recap here. So a couple of little notes before we get into tonight's recap. So the lineup was not as different as I thought it would be after Saturday's performance against Tampa Bay. Jacob Larsson remaining in the lineup. The blue line just shuffled around just a little bit. So Lindholm with Larsson on the first pairing, which I guess is an interesting bet to make if you're Dallas Eakins, because you're putting your worst defenseman, arguably one of your worst defensemen, with your best defenseman and just hoping that averages out to something decent. So
not a terrible idea.
I don't hate the methodology there. Fowler, Gudbranson, they were good tonight, so we're going to give them a pass on that. And Gooley, Holzer. So look, like we talked about last game, Dallas Eakins is working with, let's just call it, limited options right now. And I think this is probably like a neutral good, this blue line combination that he had in there tonight. Nick Deloria returning to the lineup. Devin Shore was out. And outside of that, no real changes outside of Gibson getting back into the cage. And right off of the hop, John Gibson gets a stinger off of his right arm from a slap shot from the point. Mm-hmm. And it hit the part of his arm pad where it's the arm and the shoulder. There's a bit of a break there where there's no coverage, and it stung the heck out of him. He had to fall, and that left the cage wide open, except that the rebound shot out to the right wing, and the Islanders were able to get a shot on net into just at the empty net, seemingly empty net, and John Gibson just throws up the glove hand and snags it out of the air. Highlight reel save.
Yeah.
And after that, Gibson stayed down and looked really hurt. What was very interesting, and maybe one of the better gifs that you'll see, the Ducks Twitter account posted this, but they got a shot of Ryan Miller when it was, I guess, decided that Gibson was staying in after being down for some time and looking like he was in obvious pain. Ryan Miller just looks and is like, oh, I guess I'm not going back in. He had his helmet on, was fully ready to go. So Gibson showing a lot of toughness to stay in this game after that save.
Yeah, and to be able to have the wherewithal win in a lot of pain, to be able to find the puck, get his glove up. He wasn't obviously fully able to recover, but to even make some sort of acrobatic save there is kind of insane. And so, I mean, just think about how different the complexion of the game is if the Islanders score there on that play. And Gibson, I mean, part of it might be a little bit lucky, the fact that the Islanders player did not make a better shot there, but Gibson found a way to find it. And
I mean, I think it was a decent shot. I mean, he shot it high.
He shot it high, but it was like right in the middle of the net.
Yeah, but you're not trying to go, you know,
fair
high corner fair. When the goalie's on his
fair.
Tummy on the ground.
Fair.
I think it's just John Gibson absolutely robbing one.
But think about how different the complexion of this game is if that puck finds a way in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It would have been totally different, and the Ducks needed that because they were not very good in the first period.
Yeah.
Nick Ritchie took a really bad holding penalty. Oh, just
not good.
Just bear hugging his man when he didn't even have to. I mean, all he had to do was lift a stick or keep skating.
Yeah.
You know, that's a common theme with these types of penalties. But the Ducks did manage to kill that off. And but really just overall not a fantastic first period for the Ducks. You know, they were outplayed for the most part. There was a fight. Nick Deslauriers, he fights almost every single game he plays. It is kind of impressive that he manages to do that. There was a big hit on Derek Grant at center ice by Cal Clutterbuck, and then Nick Deslauriers tries to go after Clutterbuck, but instead Scott Mayfield jumps in and they fight, and then somehow Nick Deslauriers gets an extra penalty for roughing against Cal Clutterbuck.
It makes this
that was an odd one.
No, it was not odd. This was not odd.
Okay. All right. I thought it was a bit odd just watching the play, but clear, maybe I missed something.
Clear as day. I mean, maybe it's because I was there, and so you're able to kind of...
that's true.
Like, I don't know if they kind of panned away from it, but Deslauriers was basically... The puck was in the defensive zone for the Ducks, and all Deslauriers was doing was grabbing Clutterbuck and just constantly, like, shoving him, trying to throw little jabs, trying to get him to drop the gloves, and he never did.
Okay, and I definitely didn't see that.
Yeah, and so that's why. And the thing is, no matter what in that situation, the refs are going to call the extra 2 minutes on Deslauriers. I mean, that's pretty much standard at this point. If a guy lays out a big hit, especially if it's completely clean, and a guy kind of goes out of his way to start the fight with the guy who hit the guy, you're going to get an extra 2 minutes, whether it's for instigating, whether it's for roughing. You're going to get the extra two, and you've got to be smarter than that. And it was just kind of poor recognition, and it was one of those where the fight happened, I saw the refs kind of go over, and I knew right away that there was going to be a two-minute penalty. I think I was actually at the game with my wife and told her, I was like, watch, there's going to be a two-minute extra penalty on Deslauriers for this.
It's funny because the commentators, the Ducks broadcasters, were also at the game, but they were absolutely in disagreement with this extra penalty. Shocker. But
I mean, he was grabbing and shoving and throwing little punches at Clutterbuck when Clutterbuck was not gonna drop the gloves.
Right. Well, it's just, I mean, this is just a frustrating trend in the NHL overall that anytime there's a big hit, a big clean hit, it has to result in a fight.
And that's the point of having the extra penalty there, is that it's almost as if, well, you're gonna get an extra penalty if you're going after a guy after a clean hit, almost. Like, to me, I'm fine with that, because that's making that guy and singling him out to his team as being basically trying to tell him, be smarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So overall, Ducks just managing to survive that first period. I don't think that the Islanders were necessarily threatening in the first, but they were controlling play. They did get the better of the chances. And I think really what was the most... I think the biggest negative for the Ducks in that first period was just that they really couldn't get any offense going. They really were not generating much. They only had one high danger chance at 5-on-5 in the first period.
Yeah, and they only had five shots on goal.
Yeah, like, it was a rough first period.
Yeah.
And not how I didn't see a massive reversal coming in the second period, but that's exactly what happened, because as the game went along, the Ducks really grabbed control of this game and for the most part never looked back. I mean, the Islanders did make a pretty significant push in the third period, but I did think that the Ducks were good when they needed mm-hmm. to be. And Ryan Getzlaff would get the first goal of the night for Anaheim, the first goal of the game off of a set faceoff play where Getzlaff would win it back to Eric Gudbranson, who then immediately taps it over to Rickard Rakell at the top of that faceoff circle. He just slams one on net, and Thomas Greiss, not the best rebound control here because it catches his glove and the puck just pops back out right into the slot, and then Ryan Getzlaff is able to just kind of poke at it a little bit, and somehow Jordan Eberle hits him and finds its way into the back of the net. At first, it looked like it was going to be Troy Terry's goal, but if you look at the replay, Troy Terry really never touches it. It's Jordan Eberle who basically scores on his own goalie, and so that would open up the scoring for Anaheim, and I think that you know, there's all goals are always, it's always good timing to get a goal, but that was definitely, I think, a timely goal for the Ducks.
Yeah, and this was right around the time the Ducks started pressing and getting some good chances. They had just built upon some good chances coming from the Nick Ritchie line. The Ducks were able to capitalize there, which was really good and really beneficial for the Ducks to get that right there. And hopefully, yes, I know Troy Terry did not score the goal.
Much to your chagrin.
Yeah, I was very happy thinking in person that I just saw a Troy Terry goal. But he was in the right place at the right time. This was a good chance set up by that line as a whole. And I think that is a good thing coming because I'm not quite sure how many goals that line has specifically set up this season. So,
well, they haven't been together very much either.
No, this was the third game I think they've been together. And so... good to see the puck find the back of the net. And then later on in this game, they also found the back of the net. So, two goals for that line, and they were dangerous tonight.
Right, exactly. And in the second period overall, I thought that the Ducks just really controlled play. I mean, they had some extended possessions in the Islanders zone where they were just cycling the puck, controlling, not necessarily getting to those dangerous areas, but hey, there's something to be said for just controlling play, just forcing your opponent to play at your pace and to not be able to do what they want.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we talked about this in our Patreon pod on Sunday that the Islanders are one of those teams that gives up a lot of shot attempts, but there's this big disparity in the amount of shot attempts that they give up and the quality of those shots. And the Islanders are one of those teams that manages to really restrict the types of looks that their opponents get. But watching this game, I really started to wonder, is that really an effective strategy if you're just allowing the other team to cycle infinitely and wearing you down? Because eventually that fatigue is going to catch up to you, and I would argue that it did for the Islanders in this game.
And we see that in the Ducks this game is, if you look at kind of different charts and different types of things throughout the game, is that in that second period specifically, the Ducks got a really big flurry of chances that ended up resulting in the Ryan Getzlaff goal. And that's kind of where the Ducks ended up winning. If you're looking at the expected goal battle on the night, is in that big flurry in the second period. And so even though, yes, the Islanders are typically good at limiting chances against, tonight they had one bad flurry and that was it. I mean, at the end of the day, they lost this game 3-0. That was the first goal in the game. That was the game-winning goal. That's the difference in the game.
Yeah, we'll get into this later, but watching this Islanders team, I was not very impressed.
Yeah.
It's just they actually remind me of the Ducks a little bit last year.
Yeah.
The way in which they play.
Low event, boring.
Yeah, and everything they do is kind of just, it feels like they're playing the game the way it was played 15 years ago.
Did you notice Matt Barzal that much?
I did, actually. I thought that in the third period, he was noticeable. The first two periods, I'll agree with you, he was not... Well, you didn't actually say he wasn't noticeable, but I'm getting a sense from your tone.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
But I thought in the third period, he made some pretty shifty moves in the duck zone. Yeah. The Steele-Kasha-Ritchie line, once again, I thought looked really good, especially in that second period. And Henrik Silfverberg and Max Jones also getting some good cycles in. And hey, that's good for those guys' confidence as well, even if it doesn't necessarily result in a goal. To the third period we go. This is just vintage Ryan Getzlaff. This is, as you would like to say, the I'm Ryan Getzlaff and you're not moment of the game.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that first goal, let's be honest, it wasn't a memorable goal for Ryan Getzlaff just in terms of the highlight reel worthiness. But this is a really simple play from the Ducks. Cam Fowler brings it up the ice, and this is with just under 7 minutes left in the game. So this is coming at a pretty opportune time for the Ducks, especially because the Islanders had been pushing a little bit here. Cam Fowler skates up to the Islanders' blue line, just a soft dump into the right corner. And hey, Troy Terry coming in on the forecheck, just pressuring Nick Leddy just a little bit, just enough to make it uncomfortable. And then Ryan Getzlaff comes in to pick up the slack and makes one of those passes that you have to look at it a couple times to truly understand and appreciate it. He looks off both defenders, just kind of stares at Tomas Greiss, and then has the puck out at one angle. But then really he's doing that just to open up another angle, and then slides it through the legs of his defender out to Cam Fowler, who's sneaking in backdoor. And by the way, Matt Barzal, you want to talk about not noticeable. not noticeable in a good way on this play. Totally forgot Cam Fowler coming in backdoor. Cam Fowler receives the Getzlaff pass. He comes in and just picks the top left corner, bar down and in. And that would make it 2-0 in Anaheim. That was a huge goal. Highlight reel all around. The assist, the finish. I thought that it was a really nice, just, you know, not necessarily coming off of a set play or anything like that, but just a good read and react type play from both Getzlaff and Fowler, because Fowler recognizes the space that's opening up. He dashes in there and makes it all happen as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great read by him to see that space and jump into it. And, I mean, what more is there to say about Ryan Getzlaff? I mean,
Hold on. I thought you were going to say what more is there to say about Troy Terry.
Oh, yeah, definitely about Troy Terry. Troy Terry, by the way, got the assist on that play, so he touched the puck somehow.
Troy Terry, by the way, blacked stick tape tonight. Want to point that out.
You're the person that pays attention to stick tape, like, religiously. Does he usually use black stick tape?
No, he always uses white. Actually, you and Troy Terry have about the same tape job, so maybe that's why you guys are best buddies.
Is that a compliment to me?
He's your best buddy. I don't know if he feels the same way, but anyway, you were saying about the assist.
Yes. I wasn't talking about the assist. You brought that up.
Or you were talking about Ryan Getzlaff.
I was definitely talking about Ryan Getzlaff there. Mm-hmm. No, this was one of those moments where, as Getzlaff's career is starting to dwindle down, we really just need to take a moment to appreciate how good he is, and even still, how difficult that pass is, how difficult it is to make that happen and open up the lanes, and just appreciate it. Just appreciate the skill, appreciate the I am Ryan Getzlaff and you're not moments, because who knows if the Ducks will ever have a talent like him again.
Don't hate, just appreciate, folks. That's the message we're sending out to you on this Monday night. So on that note, we are going to go into our first break. On the other side, we're going to wrap up this recap and get into some final thoughts on this game. Okay, back from the first break. So almost immediately after the Fowler goal, Andre Kasha, who has been a bit snake bitten this season. Has been absolutely pouring it on, as he always does, leading the Ducks in almost every shooting category at 5-on-5. Just a kind of an innocuous play. I mean, he picks up a bouncing puck that Sam Steele deflects off of a good Branson pass, gloves it down, which is a nice play, but then just flicks it on net, and somehow, it beats Tomas Greiss, whose feet are touching the goal line. Keep in mind, Andre Kasha is at the boards here. He is so far out.
Yeah.
There's really no reason why this should go in. But hey, sometimes that's the way it goes in this sport. I mean, Andre Kasha has had much better looks this season that have not found the back of the net. And on this one, he just catches a break, and that would make it 3-0. So two back-to-back goals, and that would just basically put away the Islanders. I mean, that's all she wrote at that point.
Yep. And these are the types of breaks that you'll start to get if you're throwing the puck on net consistently, and as Kasha has. And so this is a little bit of the positive regression we kind of expect out of him, to see the puck hit the back of the net. And I think just good also from a confidence perspective, kind of looking outside the number and trying to just like isolate the player and the impact on his own mental game. I think for Kasha, maybe he was feeling a bit snake bitten, and seeing the puck go in, especially with a shot like that, almost can reinforce your confidence. And so I think that that's a really good play for him. Also, is that something that we might see happen to the Islanders more as the season goes on? Because that's the exact type of goal you kind of expect to see for a team that's getting shelled at a certain point and allowing the pressure to come to them. And you're basically expecting weird bounces tend to happen to those types of teams because so many shots are being fired at their net.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. A friend of mine texted me during the game, the Islanders are a team that could definitely use Taylor Hall if Taylor Hall is truly going to be on the trade block this season.
Yeah.
And yeah,
what
they
would it
definitely
take to get him though.
That's the
Barzal thing.
I don't think it would take Barzal, but I don't know. Actually, I have no idea. Maybe Noah Dobson, one of their top prospects. I don't know. But it would take a top prospect, you know, the usual drill.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm really not high on this Islanders team.
I think
They're trying to play hockey like it was played 15 years ago. They have this really kind of set in stone lineup distribution that I'm just not a big fan of. I mean, yeah, they have some talent. They're not just this terrible team, but I think Trotz is making them this very robotic team, and then Lou Lamoriello is the GM. So
yeah,
they're the all great franchise.
We should make mention as we're kind of really digging in on the Islanders being bad. This ended, I believe it was a 10-game point streak for him. Maybe it was greater. I think I heard something that was like early
17-game.
17-game point streak. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they find ways to win, but you saw in the playoffs last year, I feel like that has an expiration date.
Oh, completely. I'm not saying...
I mean, they beat the Penguins in the first round, so I'm not...
Yeah.
But a flawed Penguins team, and then they got destroyed in the second round. So
I'm not arguing that they're good because of that point streak. I'm just saying
that is a thing
that happened.
Oh, I know, but I'm just kind of addressing this idea that I think a lot of people hold that the Islanders are this kind of good team that can make a playoff push, and I just don't see it at all, personally.
I'm now curious how many of their wins have been in overtime fashion of late. Their last four games have all gone to overtime. Then the one before that, they have a lot of overtime games.
Yeah. Okay. That's enough on the Islanders. Notable performances on the Ducks side tonight, though. Erik Gudbranson, maybe his best game as a Duck so far. Fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We got a tweet. I believe it was, let me double check the person who sent it, but was basically saying that Jordan Cassidy said the Ducks are basically doing the exact pairings that you did not want to see last podcast.
Someone said that. Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Because we basically said that Gudbranson Fowler is not something we want to see. But it worked. It worked tonight.
Yeah, and I thought that Gudbranson, he did the thing that I've been the most critical of him for, really the only thing, because I've tried to make a point that I don't think there are that many glaring weaknesses in this game. He did a good job of cleaning up in front tonight. He was boxing guys out, making sure that the Islanders weren't getting second or third opportunities. That's really like, if he can just meet that threshold, he has done his job. He is accounted for in my books. And look, that pairing had some of the best numbers on the night, a little bit influenced by Fowler's one great chance that will shoot up that expected goal number.
And I think they were also on the ice for the Getzlaff flurry that led to the goal, that one big flurry. Basically, any Ducks player that was on the ice for that big flurry that led to the very first Getzlaff goal ended up on the night with a positive expected goals for percentage because of that one flurry.
Yeah, but still, I mean, they had the second lowest expected goals against at 5-on-5, so they were holding their own defensively as well. So I think it's just a good night for Fowler, Gudbranson. And that is something that the Ducks, I'm sure, will be happy about because they have been really struggling to find consistent pairings. Not as great of a night, though, for Gouley and Holzer. Once again, they didn't really have to do much. They weren't really noticeable tonight. Gouley did have one nice chance in the offensive zone where he kind of skated around and got a shot off. But others than that, I mean, it was kind of same old for them. And then Lindholm and Larson, who, in theory, is a potentially workable pairing in practice quite the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to giving them another game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one game.
Especially against the Coyotes, who, as much as I've kind of sang their praises...
As much as you would buy a jersey of theirs if given the opportunity.
Hey, I don't care how they're playing. The Kachina jersey is great. but their 5-on-5 numbers have really taken a tailspin. And so I think that maybe trying out these pairings for another game isn't a bad idea.
Here's my only concern with this idea of running that back one more time.
Yeah.
Larson was basically out there against the fourth line for the most part of the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
He was not getting heavy Barzal minutes at all, or, you know, top line, top 6 minutes. And so if he's getting caved in like that against the best fourth line in hockey, I should give them a little credit here.
Yeah, come on. Get it right.
Yeah, get it right. I don't know. But yeah, sure. I mean, one more game, you know, it's just one game. I think that we need to do maybe a better job of not overreacting positively or negatively to single game performances.
we do a podcast.
That's all we do.
What would we do on this podcast if we didn't have that?
Yeah, you're right. We got to stick to the hot takes.
Yeah, seriously. Come on.
But yeah, I mean, to me though, if I'm going to don my hot take cloak one more time here, Larson managed to make Lindholm's numbers bad. That is an astounding thing, because even Gudbranson was good with Lindholm. So if Larson is going to be this bad next to Lindholm against one of the least potent offensive teams in the NHL, that red flag is wave it any harder.
The only thing that I will add as a context/qualifier to that is they did have Larson playing on his offside.
Huh?
You're not buying that at all, are you?
I don't care for that argument.
All right, fair. I figured I would throw it out there.
Maybe it is having an effect, because putting my little insider cap on here, one of the rare times I can do it. Insider cap.
Where is this coming from?
Well, just prepare yourself. I gotta crack my knuckles here.
Give it to me.
At the Ducks rookie face-off tournament, which I got a chance to have a press pass to, when after the Ducks last game against, I believe, San Jose, I got a chance to go interview Larson after the game. And I didn't ask this, but I think it was Eric Stevens that asked him about playing on his off wing. And he didn't, his body language in response to that question, he didn't seem this.
Are we analyzing body language?
He did not. I'm just saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm putting on my tinfoil hat, whatever you want to call it. He did not seem enthused by the question. I don't think he was thrilled about that question.
Well, hey, we're analyzing body language.
These things matter.
Did you track his hot dog?
All I'm saying is they were putting him on his off wing in a rookie game.
Yeah, fair.
And I just don't think he was thrilled about it. I probably don't think he was thrilled that was the first thing he was asked.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he's probably not thrilled he's doing it right now, and it's probably making him look a little worse than he probably is.
Yeah. So, hey, the argument I was trying to make, you just gave validity to.
There you go. Yeah. Boom.
You just proved my point, so thank you.
Boom. Hot take cloak and insider hat. Yeah, there we go.
So, back to the point. Larson may be being put into a position that's maybe not the best for him to succeed. I'd be curious if maybe they look at bringing in Delzato.
Here's the thing.
Waving the flag.
What is the best position for Larson to succeed? Okay, we're going to give you 12 minutes on the third pairing with all offensive zone starts, and you're not going to play against anybody. Like, at what point are you just not asking basically anything of the guy? Sorry. That's just how I feel.
That's why we have this show.
I'm pouring out my heart to this pod right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough.
I think this is the most emotional I've ever seen you on the show, and it's about Jacob Larson.
All right. Enough talk of fringe NHL players. Let's talk about guys who are legit NHL players. Where do I even begin? There's a couple to choose from here. First off, I know we've already talked about Ryan Getzlaff and how good he was tonight, but outside of that, I mean, once again, I think Ricard Raquel looked very good.
That line as a whole was really good.
Yeah, and Andre Kasha putting up good numbers again. Now, the one thing that I think is a little bit interesting, although I thought that the Steele, Richie, Kasha line had some really good moments, their numbers didn't quite reflect that as much, but I'm still buying that line long term.
Yeah, I think that line is, I mean, we have so much kind of evidence of Kasha and Richie working well together that mm-hmm. I'm pretty confident.
Can they carry Sam Steele is the question.
Yeah, and not necessarily carry him, but put him into a position to succeed.
Yeah, and still, I mean, even on the night they were a plus in shot attempts and they were slightly below in terms of shot quality, but in terms of raw volume, which you would expect with Andre Kasha and Nick Ritchie out there, they still did fine. So I'm going to bet on the volume here a little bit instead of the kind of one game. Because I feel like we were talking about this before the show started recording, but I think that these quality numbers are much more prone to kind of shift-by-shift variance as opposed to shot attempts. Even though shot attempts are beholden to that as well, we have a little bit more data points with shot attempts than we do with the expected goals.
The one thing I will say about expected goals, and whether, I mean, you can make the argument that this is what it should be doing, it's subject to being skewed by one or two good chances, which is kind of the point you're trying
to... what is the alternative?
The true. You're trying to look at how they did, what chances they caught.
The entire point is to give weight to shot quality.
Yeah.
And if you get a great chance, that matters more than anything else.
That's completely true. But the only reason why I bring that up is that we can say that that Getzloff, Terry, and Raquel, they were on the ice for, 0.82 expected goals for, and I think 0.6 of that were due to that flurry chance from Getzloff. So. Right. But they were all on the ice for 0.1 expected goals against. So it's not as if they were kind of, allowing some good chances their own way. Also, they were really kind of, keeping it in the other team's zone and not allowing anything going the other way, which is good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that I wanted to touch on this game, John Gibson looked really good. And again, putting my hat on here, my medical expert hat on now. I'm just rolling out the hats. I really do think that resting him on Saturday, because to me that was more of a rest on Saturday, giving him those 3 days between games as opposed to doing the every other night thing, I think that really paid off in this game.
Yeah.
Especially in that first period, because I know just, again, this is my opinion, but I do think that last year they play him against Tampa Bay on Saturday because they want him to play out of a funk, or they're desperate for a win. Last year, John Gibson was playing an insane schedule, and I think that it really hurt him down the line. It literally hurt him because he got injured.
You should rephrase that. They weren't desperate for a win. Randy Carlisle was desperate for a win.
Sure. I mean, yeah, Randy Carlisle wanted to keep his job. And
yeah.
I'm not going to blame him for that.
No, I know. Fair.
But it didn't work out long term. And with John, and with the way that they're approaching this now, I think this is the way to go. Hey, they took the loss on Saturday, and that stung, but then you get a perfectly healthy, or I mean, more so rested John Gibson for tonight's game. And look, I know Ryan Miller didn't play well on Saturday, but you kind of have to be willing to live with that. And I also don't think that the way he played on Saturday was not at all characteristic of what we've seen from him so far in Anaheim. And I would still be a proponent of playing him even more, just to get John Gibson as much rest as he possibly can get.
Yep, I 100% agree. Understand where you are at with the season. As we've talked about kind of as a whole, that the Ducks really need to understand this season and what they're trying to accomplish, that it's not necessarily about winning a Stanley Cup. So if that's the case,
shocker.
Yeah, don't run your goalie into the ground this year.
Yeah, exactly. Just find ways to keep guys healthy, and when the chips are going to be down, maybe next season or in a couple seasons, then they'll be thanking themselves for it.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going a different route with that.
One thing that I did want to talk about, which I found kind of interesting. So Eric Stevens put out an article at The Athletic about an interview with Kevin Shattenkirk and turning down the Ducks free agent offer. Interesting. it sounds like it got pretty close. Or was he just being nice?
It sounds like it was between Tampa and Anaheim.
It sounds like, honestly, that I'm not sure what more the Ducks could have done. They had Cam Fowler talk to him. Because I guess Kevin Shattenkirk's brother worked for the Ducks in their marketing department, which I didn't even know.
The only thing that maybe, because wasn't it reported that they only offered him 2 years?
Maybe, but the Lightning offered him only one, didn't they?
Yeah, but maybe the third year may have been that over-the-top type thing. Now, granted, maybe it wasn't about money at all. Maybe it was simply he was going to Tampa. He made the decision. He was going to Tampa. There was no additional money or term that could make that difference.
And, well, I mean, what it sounded like was that a big part of it was proximity to his family. That's all on the East Coast. And he just had a kid. And I guess
was like his lowest on the actual decision list, though.
Yeah, he said that was probably one of the last factors that we thought about.
Yeah.
So last doesn't necessarily mean least. It just means on the order scale.
Fair.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's interesting, though, because he talks about, well, you know, going to play with Cam Fowler or Victor Hedman, you know, there's no bad options in there. And so Cam Fowler getting spoken about in the same breath as Victor Hedman. Interesting. Among his peers.
Well, I think he's good buddies with Cam because of both of them coming up through the U.S. or both of them probably played with each other on various different U.S. teams.
Right.
You also have the connection of, I believe, Kevin Shattenkirk and Nick Bonino were college roommates or something along those lines from what I remember on Twitter. And Bonino and Fowler are really good friends.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, looking into it, I think that, yeah, he also makes the argument that he does have family out here. So maybe the Lightning just provide, maybe just as a competitor, the Lightning just provided the best competitive opportunity. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you're looking at a Ducks team that was one of the worst teams in the NHL last season and a team that's coming off the President's Trophy that's asking you to come play for them.
Yeah.
So I think as just from a career perspective, do you think he made the right choice between the two teams?
Yeah, it's a tough question because it's a situation that it depends on if he's looking for job security or if he's looking for the potential to win the cup. And what's your priority? What are you looking for? Because what do you get? 1 year, $1 million?
Mm-hmm.
As compared to, I guess, supposedly the Ducks offered him a $5 million total deal over 2 years. So basically he left $4 million on the table and there's the potential for him not getting that with him being in his 30s. So there's a whole lot at play. But, I mean, if you go to Tampa, you're in the race to win the cup. You go to the Ducks, you're most
likely 1.75 with Tampa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're in the race. You're going to be in the race to win the cup. You're not going to probably be in that race to win the cup with the Ducks.
I think in his head, it's the math goes something like, okay, 1 year on a really good team where I'm going to get playoff exposure, potentially play big minutes, put up some points. That will then get me paid, and I'll have higher leverage the summer after. So you're betting on those things to happen, which, I mean, you could get hurt, right? There's a bunch of things that could go
wrong
there.
There's a lot at play.
But, yeah, I mean, he made the more aggressive decision, but I don't – like you said, there's not really, like, a right or wrong here. And if he had gone to Anaheim, it would have been a defensible – decision, and if he had going to Tampa Bay is perfectly defensible as well. But
yeah,
I just found it interesting that he was so open in talking about it. You don't really often see these types of quotes from NHL players about their decision making process in the offseason. I mean, usually this is like NBA stuff.
Could you see him potentially signing with the Ducks next offseason?
Aha. Well, funny you should say that because the Ducks will have a little more cap space this coming off season?
Will they?
Actually, sorry, they'll have less because of the Corey Perry buyout. Oh yeah, that worked out great. Well, technically, it's still more cap space than if they had kept Corey Perry.
Here's the issue: is Goodbranson the $4 million that he's eating up?
Yeah, they're not going to be able to afford
Shattenkirk. It's Goodbranson's $4 million on the cap that is probably going to limit them from being able to get a Shattenkirk.
Imagine going from Kevin Shattenkirk Justin Falk to prohibitive Eric Goodbranson cap space.
Wait, you skipped Lucas Biza.
Oh, sorry. My apologies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge apologies to Lucas Biza there. Yeah, I mean, look, we're dumping a lot on Eric Goodbranson, and I feel kind of bad because his results have actually not been terrible the last couple of games.
He's been fine. He's still not worth the $4 million that they're
stuck with. His contract is still way above
what he's bringing to the table. I still don't know how they didn't get Pittsburgh to retain. I still have no clue on that.
Well, it's because Jim Rutherford is Bob Marino's back pocket. I mean, it's simple as that if you look at some of these trades. Who would you rather have right now, Marcus Pettersson or Daniel Sprong? I mean, we've been over this on the pod, but that's just the way it seems to go with these two teams.
What was it, Joseph Blandisi for Derek Grant?
I mean, I don't know how to rate that one. I guess it definitely worked out in the Ducks' favor.
Yeah,
looking back,
the last one. I mean, the Haglund for Perron trade was fine.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's go into our second break here. On the other side, we're gonna get into some questions and wrap things up. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back from the final intermission. Any final thoughts here, closing thoughts on tonight's game, things that are just kind of rolling around in your head?
The Islanders are boring.
The Islanders are extremely boring. I feel bad. I feel bad because I think Matthew Barzal is a legitimately exciting player to watch. And again, I think their roster isn't necessarily all that boring inherently. It's just the way they're being coached. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's all.
We had not a question, but it was a comment. So I think it's time to jump into some questions. So real quick, for those of you watching the recorded version of this on YouTube, if you want to find us on YouTube, like and subscribe. Hit that bell, as Felix would say, and you'll be notified anytime that a YouTube video has been added. And if we have a recorded version of the show also on any of your favorite podcast services. And then we also do our live stream, which is where the bread and butter is at. And that is where we have a really good time on our live stream. And if you want to join in live, you can find us at twitch.tv/acpod. And you can help support the show with, if you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime sub each and every time. You have to hit that subscribe button every 30 days. But it helps us out significantly. Sorry, I'm tired. It's 11:30. This has been a struggle of one for me. we have a question from Bionic Crisis that I thought is a good one, or more of a comment. But should Troy Terry cut his stick shorter?
Wow, that is interesting. I mean, will it make him shoot the puck more?
Oh, that's a very. This is a very big question for you.
He again had an opportunity tonight, had a great feed, I believe in the first period, from Ryan Getzlaff, and had a clear shooting lane and went back to Getzlaff. It's just the guy, maybe all of Getzlaff's unwillingness to shoot got transferred over to Troy Terry being on that line, because now Getzlaff is second on the team in shots on goal. I don't know what it is, but someone tell Troy Terry, shoot the puck. Because he's not doing enough right now. So whether he's using a long stick or a short stick, I don't think it will make that big of a difference in his game. And I don't really think his mechanics are the issue. I don't think him getting a shorter stick is going to make him a better player. You know, when I think shorter stick, I think like a guy like Andre Kasha, who's really hunched over, who's going just barreling into the corner and needs maybe a bit of a shorter stick just to dig it out. Although I'm not even sure how short his actually is. But with Terry, I don't really see that being the issue here.
All right. We have a question from Bonnie that asks, how many times/percentage do players opt not to come play for Western Conference teams?
I mean, I'm sure it's part of the thought process because of the longer travel. The travel for Western teams has been, I mean, it's been talked about many times over that it's far more challenging than Eastern travel, where, you know, DC to Pittsburgh, DC to New York. I mean, just these are very short flights, you know, less of an impact on sleep, that type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, if all things are equal and you're looking at two good situations like a Kevin Shattenkirk was, well, then you're thinking, okay, I'm going to go to where I can sleep more. I don't know. I have no idea.
And it's not just sleep more. It's just travel. It's the wear and tear that travel has on your body, on your brain, on everything. You're able to just get more rest. You look at how concentrated, if you just look at a map, all the teams in the Eastern Conference are. And then in comparison, look at where every team in the West is. Hmm. And I think it was like Scott Niedermeyer or something like that, that had a quote when he came West that I don't think he realized how, or he was like, I didn't realize how easy I had it in the Eastern Conference, with travel and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably going to do it for questions tonight. This game was boring. I think that's essentially what's happened, is that the game bored people out of some questions.
It's okay. We'll be right back on Wednesday. The Ducks have a pretty packed schedule this week, even though it's Thanksgiving. They couldn't cut us podcasters a break. They had to just pack it in. Mm-hmm. So the Ducks play again on Wednesday against the Coyotes. This one is in Arizona, and then they play again on Friday at 1 p.m. against the Jets.
Question just came in from Bionic Christ, said, who's ready for the goals to get a look at the big club? Real quick, I actually heard something from someone who was down in San Diego on the weekend watching the goals. Said Daniel Sprong looked by far the best player for the goals.
We talked about his shooting totals. And they're ridiculous on that team.
But specifically over the weekend, he just looks head and shoulders above everyone else.
I mean, as he should be. I mean, that to me is kind of the expectation. He should be really dominating at that level if he wants to have a chance to get back.
I would say, if we're saying who's ready from the goals, I would say Daniel Sprong.
Yeah, Kiefer Sherwood, you know, but the thing, I mean, although I love watching Kiefer Sherwood play, I don't know if he really raises the Ducks ceiling, whereas Daniel Sprong, if you get him into the right spot, he has that kind of higher level skill where he can really kind of give you a different look offensively. I haven't really watched too much of the goals that this season to really say.
Yep. The only thing with Sherwood is I think he was hurt over the weekend. I don't think he played. So that may factor into it.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I would go all in on Daniel Sprong at this point. And also, I mean, like we've talked about, at some point, the Ducks probably want to give him some reps at the NHL level because he is a restricted free agent this summer. And they probably want to at least have an idea of what they're getting themselves into. Any other questions? Anything else we've got here?
Bonnie confirms it was a lower body injury for Sherwood. So,
okay.
There you go.
There we go. All right, folks. Well, that is going to do it for tonight's game and tonight's show. Thank you so much for listening in and submitting your questions. And for those of you, of course, listening on the recorded version, well, thank you for listening as you always do and subscribing. Everything that comes with it. Couple different ways to support the show. One is we do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/acpod. We give you two separate tiers that you can support the show at. One is the dollar tier, where for $1 a month, you can jump into our Discord chat, and that's where we'll interact with you during games. You know, we'll just chat about the game, and then if there's breaking news. So it's been a lot of fun. We've been doing that more frequently for each and every game, and so I would definitely recommend that if you're just looking for, you know, if you don't have a lot of, maybe, you know, if you don't have a bunch of friends who are Ducks fans or who are diehard hockey fans, but you want someone to kind of bounce ideas off of or just chat about the game, well, I think that Discord chat is a really great place to do it. And then for $5 a month, you get two extra episodes. So if you enjoy this show, you enjoy what we do, well, then I highly recommend you do that. It's pretty similar to our regular show, except we talk more about the rest of the NHL. We get into some fun topics. For example, over the weekend, we talked about The Mandalorian. So that was a lot of fun.
Have you watched episode 3 yet?
No, because I still need to make a decision on dropping some money on Disney Plus. I'm not there yet. Jake's just shaking his head. So you have that option. If you don't want to spend any money, though, you always have the Apple Podcast app. Just leave a rating and a review. It really does help the show quite a bit. helps us climb up those rankings, helps the show get noticed. So just type in Anaheim Calling on Apple Podcasts. It takes just a minute and it lasts forever. You don't have to go back and do it again. Also, check us out on YouTube. Make sure that if you're listening to us through YouTube, to subscribe and hit the bell icon so you get notified when our shows go up after each game. And then you've got Spotify, you've got Stitcher, you've got a bunch of different ways to listen to the show. Of course, check us out on Twitter. Jake is on there at ReindeerGames91. He's got wrestling tweets. He's got soccer tweets. He's got everything. He's a multifaceted tweeter.
I've got nerd culture tweets.
He occasionally tweets about the Ducks as well.
Hey,
it's honestly a pretty even distribution.
It's really not though.
I think it might be. We need to do a study.
I don't think it is.
We need to do a study. A pie chart.
I'll let you do the study.
We'll run the numbers.
Is your study just going to be a hand drawn pie chart?
We'll see. Stay tuned.
Are you going to just draw a pie chart and put it and hold it up for everyone and point to it?
I might keep everyone on their toes. And then I'm on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. Check out AnaheimCalling.com. Also at Anaheim Calling on Twitter. That is going to do it for us tonight, guys. We will be back Wednesday night. Talk to you soon.
Bye.